Welcome to the Paleo View. I'm Stacey Toth of PaleoParents.com. You might also know me as the Broth Lady, or the inventor of the hashtag More Vegetables Than a Vegetarian. I'm the co-author of several paleo cookbooks, including Eat Like a Dinosaur, Beyond Bacon, and the upcoming Real Life Paleo. I like to talk about health at any size, and self-love, and personal acceptance. Specifically, I have a love for lifting heavy things. If you're interested in finding more out about that, you can also find me on Strong Woman Radio.
And I'm Dr. Sarah Ballantyne of ThePaleoMom.com. I'm the New York Times best-selling author of The Paleo Approach and The Paleo Approach Cookbook. I'm passionate about nutrient density and the intersection of diet and lifestyle with health, which really means I just love talking about science.
News and Views, where Sarah and I catch up and you get to listen to our gossip.
Stacey, how are you?
I am not feeling sloth-like.
You were, okay, that's a huge improvement over last week. How was your Thanksgiving?
It was wonderful. It was nice and slow, and I spent a lot of quality time with my family and got some good sleep, and now I'm back and feeling awesome. And then I listened to the blooper show of last week and blushed like crazy.
I that's the only part. So I normally don't listen to.
Yeah, me neither. I had to reinstate my subscription.
I was like, how far back do the bloopers start? I was like, there's like 10 minutes of bloopers here. This is awesome.
Oh my gosh, it was so bad.
Epic. If you haven't listened to last week's show, I mean, the show's good, but like, if you only have 10 minutes, go and listen to the last 10 minutes of the show, because epic bloopers.
And so, I mean, save it on your phone for when you're in a bad mood, because just, yeah, anyway, laugh at my expense. Go for it. Yeah, so it's kind of an exciting week for us. Have you been seeing pictures of your books in Costco?
No.
Oh. Well, I've been seeing pictures of my book in Costco. I mean, not that I can just like go to Canada and check it out, but people have like posted on Instagram. It's super exciting.
Okay, so Americans, I would really love it if someone could post a picture of my books in Costco.
America, you are slacking.
And tag me so that I see it. Because maybe people are and they're not tagging me.
Yeah, that's true.
But no, I have not seen a picture of my books in Costco yet. And I just picture me with like a single tear down my face right now.
Emoji.
Yeah. I had a really awesome Thanksgiving.
I was trying to skip that because...
No, you didn't want to hear about it.
I didn't want to hear your bragging.
I got the Crandalls.
I had them for years.
I had so much fun. So Russ Crandall from The Domestic Man came with his family and stayed at our house for 3 days. And, I mean, first of all, they're like... Well, clearly Stacey's my favorite person in paleo. Tied for my favorite people in paleo. And Matt, too. Okay, wait. You guys are all tied. I'm like, there's no way to say this statement without offending somebody.
You like
they
them.
They are just, it's awesome okay. people. And I love them. And it was really neat to... I've never actually, like, really hung out with just the Crandalls. So it was kind of a neat, like, getting to know them, finding out more about them. We found out that there's... Russ and my husband have a lot of geekiness in common, which was really fun. And so we ended up like just really, I think, bonding as family. And then their son and my girls played so well together. They just had the most fun. There was like almost, I mean, we basically didn't see the kids for the entire weekend. They were just off playing, mostly torturing our cat, and then playing in leaves. And it was just, it was delightful. And then Russ brought a turkey that was a fully pasture-raised turkey from Tendergrass Farms. And it was the best turkey I've ever had. And like a huge part of that was that it was that Tendergrass Farms, I think, just grows the best turkey. But it was also Russ also cooks the best turkey. So that combination just made it ridiculously awesome. And I loved like, it was, for me, it was so much lower stress to just worry about, you know, some pumpkin pies and some side dishes and not have to think about the turkey and then, you know, getting the stuffing into the turkey at the special time and getting it in the oven and basting and whatever. So Russ smoked it and he completely handled that part. And it just made the whole day just so much more relaxing to not be the only cook. And we had this great company. We went really crazy and we shared a bottle of wine between four grown-ups over 2 days.
Oh, that's pretty wild.
But we played board games. We took them on a hike. Like, it was just kind of like our dorky, geeky, low-key type of stuff that we like to do. And it was really nice to have people who also enjoyed those things. And so it was just a really wonderful visit. And it just felt like by the time it was over and they were heading back to Florida, it just felt like there was still so many conversations left to have and still so many great things to talk about. And so we're already sort of figuring out when the next time we can get together is and whether it'll be in Georgia or Florida. But it was just really wonderful. And it was awesome. And I don't know if Russ listens to our podcast. So if he does, he's probably blushing somewhere right now.
I think he was like the 8th male listener.
So Russ, I had a lot of fun. Come back. Hopefully he's not like, hopefully he didn't go home and be like, oh man, we're never going to the Ballantyne's house ever again.
No, Russ
that
is
was too crazy.
Russ is like the most, one of like the most genuine people I've ever met in my life. He is absolutely not the kind of person who would be different to your face than hunchback. So,
but yeah, it was wonderful. And, I'm looking forward to our next get together and hopefully a new Thanksgiving tradition for as long as we live within easy driving distance of each other. So, so it was awesome. And then, you know, pretty much the rest of the weekend was fairly low key. Sunday, we did something really cool. We bought some new kitchen appliances. We are going to replace our 19-year-old dishwasher. We found the manual with the copyright information, and it does it like, David's like, how old is this? It doesn't have a website on it. Like, it's like all like toll-free phone numbers for like customer service. And so we find the little number on it. We're like, 1996. The internet was 1 year old when our dishwasher was made.
I mean, that's a tank. You might not want to get rid of that.
Well, it's basically decides. It's kind of like it's just hit its like maximum lifespan, and every single little thing is like not working all of a sudden. It doesn't clean dishes anymore, which is the main purpose of a dishwasher, oddly enough, to clean dishes. So we're quite excited about having one that maybe does what its name says it should do. And then the other thing is, I'm going to get, it's going to be delivered next week, an oven that actually heats evenly and predictably.
You were complaining about that while I was there, so I know that's exciting.
We actually got to find the manual and figure out how old the stove is.
Listen, I enjoy knowing where the hot spot in my oven is. Like, I know if I want something broiled, I can just move it to that back left corner.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, I mean, if you want something raw, you put it in the left-hand side of the oven. If you want something burnt, you put it in the right-hand side of
the
oven.
That's right. And
if you want it burnt on the outside and raw in the middle, you just make sure you switch the pan around.
Halfway through, you just rotate.
It's embarrassing to be a cookbook author and be cooking with such terrible appliances. Like, I think most people expect that, you know, a cookbook author has a beautiful kitchen. And, just so you guys know, we kind of have normal kitchens with normal stuff in them.
Yeah, I would say both of us have, you know, adequately to moderately nice sized kitchens with, you know, humble appliances and a whole lot of accoutrements on the counters.
Yes. I mean, and I don't know. I have a mix of like my accoutrements are a mix of like...
You like that fancy word I use there?
It was great. I wholly approve of French words in the English language. It is a mix of like things I got at garage sales when
totally.
I moved out on my own when I was 18. Like, and then stuff that I got at the super discount store when I was in grad school. And then like wedding gifts that were more expensive versions of things than I would ever buy myself. And then... like since blogging, like, you know, the, you know, free blend tech that I never, you know, like, well, now that I know how awesome it is, I totally would buy it. But at the time I was like, $400 blender, why would I need that? No, I totally get it. But before I tried it, totally didn't. And so it's like this weird eclectic collection of all different qualities of things, all different ages of things. Like I've got, you know, some things that are probably 50 years old because I got them at the like old folks' homes garage sale, which is kind of a sad place, but you get really good deals there. And I was 18, so there you go.
We both have a lot of pottery. That's one thing we have in common.
Both, totally. I am a pottery junkie, and I can't help myself when I see pottery, especially mugs. So, like, for me, it's, like, a different pottery mug for each person. And I probably could have, like, 20 people over and have a different pottery mug for each person.
I like bowls. I have a thing with bowls.
Me, it's mostly mugs. Mugs and then big serving dishes. I've got a really big collection of big serving dishes too.
Also, I like Druzy jewelry. I don't know why I felt compelled to tell people this, but while we're on the topic of things that we love,
seemed really irrelevant to kitchens, but topics that we love. Okay, we'll
go there. We've moved on. Sloths, pottery, and Druzy jewelry, and lifting heavy things. These are the things that matter in life.
I'm not sure I can condense a list of four.
And my kids. I'll go with top five. All my boys. I'll throw Matt in there too.
Family. Oh yeah. Okay. Matt gets in. Yeah. Just my boys. That can include Matt. I'm going to have to feel, I feel like the need to change the subject now because I feel like this is going nowhere good anymore.
Excellent.
How about the fact that we have some book tour dates coming up?
Yeah.
January 2nd in Nashville.
So we should probably start preparing for these because they're totally happening. We actually booked locations and bookstores are on board January 2nd for Nashville and January 3rd for Minneapolis, which is the postponed one from our previous tour. And we are working desperately to try to hopefully secure Toronto for January 4th.
Yeah. Well, I hope we'll have something nailed down by the end of the week.
Sweet.
Yeah. And if we don't, I don't know what we'll do. I don't know Toronto.
Toronto people, you just need to call up your local bookstores and say you want us there. Because they seem to be under the impression that nobody wants us there.
Yeah, Toronto. Just call it people.
I mean,
just those, ask like 5 million people to.
They're showing up at Costco, so maybe if they call the bookstores, it'll get done.
And then, do you have any other events planned beyond that weekend?
Just PaleoFX.
So I've added a weekend for me traveling January 24th and January 25th. On the 24th, I'm going to be in Las Vegas at the Las Vegas Costco. And on the 25th, I'm going to be in St. Peter's, which is I believe it's a suburb of St. Louis, Missouri. And I don't know if it's actually pronounced St. Louis or St. Louis.
We say Louis.
St. Louis, excellent. I'll go with that. And I'm going to be at the St. Peter's Costco because my books are in Costco, woo, woo, even though I haven't seen a picture of it.
So I'm like 99.9% sure that when you're at the Vegas Costco, there's going to be a slot machine. So can you take a picture of that for me?
Yes. Yes, I can. So I have never been to Vegas.
There's slot machines in the gas station, Sarah.
I've actually been to St. Louis and not Vegas. How? Yes, that's.
I remember driving to Vegas. We literally like drove from Arizona to Vegas. And at one point we stopped for gas and I knew that we were near Vegas because there were slot machines at the gas station. I was like, holy moly, this is crazy. So I'm pretty sure there's going to be one at Costco and we're going to need you to take a selfie.
I'll bring my selfie pole.
Excellent.
So yeah. And then beyond that, I don't have anything planned until PaleoFX. But that doesn't mean that I won't have anything. That's just what's nailed down right now. So I will see how I feel in the new year after that travel, probably, and then decide how long of a break I need. So yeah, that's the cool stuff we have going on. And I also kind of wanted to share with everyone that I'm doing a bunch of huge giveaways for the entire month. The first one went live on Monday, and so it ends, I think, Sunday night. So people, if they're listening to this, like, shortly after the show comes out, like, go hop onto my blog and go find that giveaway. And if you missed it, don't worry, because another one's going to launch Monday morning. And so there's still a live giveaway. So, so go check that out. And if you are listening to it before Sunday, there's the holiday giveaway, and there's also a Costco giveaway. I'm giving away some Costco memberships and some Costco gift cards to celebrate being in Costco. So, you know, go to my blog, www.thepaleomom.com. Did I just say two W's? That's weird. Three W's.
I just want to let you know.
Paleomom.com. You don't need W's anymore.
But here, I was going to say, here in the 21st century, we don't use W's anymore.
There's some old things that are hard to let go of sometimes.
I was like, there are some old things. I was like you?
Yeah. I was thinking that for us old-timey people, that it's hard to... It's hard to move on.
I too still like the W's.
Adapt to the new technologies and what all the new things the young kids say.
The newfangled technologies those youngsters are using, that Snapchat. Who can figure that out?
Snapchat. Do you use Snapchat?
No, I have no idea what it is, other than like your photos are supposed to disappear, but supposedly the Snapchat people are like archiving them, which doesn't surprise me at all. And it's, oh, people are all shocked. Like, really? Did you think that your photos are going to be like actually not seen by anybody? That's all I know.
That was more than I knew. I'd heard the words before and I was like, whatever. I'm social media'd out. I cannot.
Yeah, me too.
I have room in my head for more social media platforms.
Me neither.
Can't even figure out Google Circles. Do you do Google?
No, that's why we're old, because we're just sticking with what we know.
Yeah.
I got an Instagram in
time.
You're
old too.
Yeah.
I'm so glad you're old too.
I know. I have an old soul. Cool. We have a really cool show lined up that I'm excited to jump into, and I'm geeked out. We're gonna talk about my favorite topic today.
And it's our second time dedicating a show to your favorite topic. This is the Broth 2.0 show.
#SuperStacy, #BoneBrothHeals, #BreakfastSoup. Make sure you check them all out.
I get no hashtags here.
You need...
It's because I'm old, right?
No, that's true. You need to be better about hashtagging. You're too old for hashtags, I guess. Sarah's Kidneys totally has to be a hashtag.
No, I'm just telling everybody now, think of something cooler. Hashtag Sarah is the bomb. That would be good.
Hashtag those veggies are raw.
That has not my name in it.
That's true. I don't know what to tell you. You're going to have to come up with some hashtags and just roll with it. Googly eyes. That was a good hashtag.
That was a great Instagram post.
It was. Frankly. You need to continue that as like a series. We need to see it everywhere.
That can be arranged. They're actually, the googly eyes are right beside me right now. I still have them. They still exist.
For those people who don't know what we're talking about, you need to be following us on Instagram.
Yes.
Period. End of story. Cool. Well, I'm ready for you to geek out. Are you ready to do your thing?
I'm always ready.
Let's do it.
Next segment is Science with Sarah, where I take a moment to explain the details and the whys.
Science. Sarah, I'm super, super excited about the science segment because I can never learn enough about the health benefits of why I love my magical food so much. So what are you gonna explain today? What are you gonna geek out on?
Well, so I've actually covered like a lot of the health benefits of broth before in Science with Sarah segments. So I thought this was a really good opportunity to get into a little bit more detail about probably the aspect of broth that I find the most exciting, which is its glycine content. So glycine is actually, it's the simplest amino acid, and it's considered conditionally essential. So we can actually make glycine, but probably not enough for what our body needs, because glycine is actually part of all connective tissue. And when we think of connective tissue, you know, I think a lot of people think of sort of like joints and ligaments and tendons, but that actually means like all of the glue that holds cells together is made out of glycine. So basically every single part of your body has glycine in it. There's no tissue that doesn't have glycine as part of its essential structure. So it's ridiculously important, and we need to get it from the diet, even though we can make it. Actually, more importantly, other amino acids can be made from glycine, and that makes it even more useful, because if you're deficient in something else, it's actually easier to turn glycine into something else than the other way around. So, and what's really, really important to understand about glycine is it's required for DNA and RNA synthesis, and it's a building block of almost every protein. So because of that, it has incredibly extensive roles in health. I mean, there's actually a role for glycine in every aspect of your health. But there's some really major ones that are worth pointing out, because it's really easy to see how the deficiency of glycine in sort of this typical Western diet could be leading to a lot of the chronic health issues that we see. So glycine regulates the synthesis of bile salts. So if you don't have enough glycine, you don't have enough bile to help you digest fats. Glycine regulates the secretion of gastric acid. So if you don't have enough glycine, you don't have enough acidity in your stomach to cause all of the things that happens later with digestion. Glycine is one of the controls for gluconeogenesis. So it controls the production of sugars from fat and protein. So that actually controls how your body regulates energy in between meals. And glycine controls insulin sensitivity. It actually has a strong effect on the production of the hunger hormone glucagon, which is also related in energy homeostasis, so the control of our ability to regulate energy and gluconeogenesis. So glycine has these profound effects on metabolism. Glycine increases the production of creatine, so it's important for muscle repair and growth. And it also regulates the secretion of growth hormone for the pituitary gland, which also has implications for muscle repair and growth. So if you're working out, you need more glycine to support the growth of your muscles, so you're not breaking down your muscle tissues. It's really, really important in terms of our brain chemistry. It inhibits excitatory neurotransmitters, so it has an overall calming effect. But one of the things that that does is it means that it is a stress reliever. And it actually is converted into a neurotransmitter called serine, which itself promotes mental alertness and improves memory. It also boosts mood and reduces stress. So through both of those actions together, it overall helps reduce the brain chemistry effects of stress. And then it has profound effects on the immune system. So in particular, it inhibits macrophage activation. So macrophages are one type of sentinel cell that lives in almost every tissue in your body, and they're sort of like the front line of defense. They detect an infection first. And when you are glycine deficient, it actually means that it's easier to activate those cells, so it's easier to turn them on. And so glycine actually has this really important regulatory role in the immune system. It also inhibits activation of some of the inflammatory cells, like neutrophils are the major inflammatory cells. So glycine makes it harder for neutrophils to turn on, harder for monocytes to turn on, which are another major cell that's part of the innate immune system and inflammation. But it also makes it harder to turn on T cells. So it even helps regulate the adaptive immune system. And that doesn't mean that it's suppressing the immune system, but it means that sufficient glycine has this regulatory effect on the immune system. And so one of the things that's happening with chronic illness is you have these overactive immune systems and these immune systems that aren't able to shut themselves off. And that one thing that may be contributing to that is glycine deficiency, because we've find glycine in foods like bone broth, in meat connective tissue. So, you know, like things like chuck roast, but also things like skin and eating meat off the bone.
Oxtail.
I love oxtail.
Highly underutilized.
Jowl, cheek, like two of my favorite cuts. They're the same cut, but one's from a pig, one's from a cow. And so And actually, glycine is richer in seafood. And so it's something that when we sort of get overly focused on, you know, skinless, boneless chicken breast and, you know, lean pork chops and whatever, you know, those sort of like the, I'm using air quotes. I know people can't see it, but like the normal meats, there's air quotes. Did you hear the air quotes? I said them.
Yeah, I got it.
So when we get over focused on those, we get very deficient in glycine, and it has some other impacts on the human body based on some of the amino acids that we're then getting too much of, like methionine. But one of the major impacts that that has for our health is that we're not getting enough glycine to regulate all of these really fundamental processes.
I like this stuff, and now I know why.
Questions and Answers, where we answer questions submitted by you through the contact form on our websites, paleomom.com and paleoparents.com.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
So because today's podcast is bone broth themed, I thought it would be really fun to bring on a couple of really awesome guests that I know love to geek out about broth, but also because, Stacey, we've talked about this a lot before, and I kind of thought the fresh perspective would be a nice thing for our listeners in terms of answering these questions, and it gives us sort of a broader answer when we start talking about these topics. So I invited Caitlin Weeks and Nabil Boomrar. Am I pronouncing that right, Nabil?
Perfect.
Ah, oh, sweet. Authors of Mediterranean Paleo and fellow bone broth geeks. Do you guys want to share a little bit more about yourselves and about Mediterranean Paleo before we get into these questions?
Sure. My name's Caitlin. I'm the blogger behind grassfedgirl.com. I'm a certified holistic nutrition consultant, and I helped write the book Mediterranean Paleo Cooking with my husband because I noticed there were so many traditional recipes that were naturally almost paleo when I started being married to him and he started cooking for me. I was like, wow, these recipes are so healthy. And then when I went gluten-free and grain-free, I just noticed that all we had to do was change it slightly, and then they were already paleo. So I was really inspired by getting to know my husband's country and his culture, and I'll let him talk more about that.
Hi, everyone. Thank you, Stacy and Sarah, for having us in your podcast. My name is Nabil Boomrar. I'm from Algeria, North Africa. I moved to the state about 10 years ago. I worked at several restaurants here in I live in San Francisco now. I worked at several restaurants. I went to culinary school for 2 years. I graduated about five years ago. And I worked for Visa headquarters, and now I work for a hotel chain called Omni in San Francisco. And I do banquets and weddings. All right.
That's fun. One of the reasons why I thought that having you guys on for a bone broth show would be like really apt was because I went to your book signing in Atlanta a few weeks ago. And one of the questions that you got was about bone broth and how that sort of features really heavily in Mediterranean cooking. And it is definitely something that you see throughout the Mediterranean Paleo cookbook. Do you want to just kind of talk a little bit about how that's sort of a traditional food in Mediterranean cooking?
Yes. Most of the food we cook back home is even chicken, meat, or fish, it's all with the bone in. We don't use any fillet in our cookings. Even we use the fillet itself. But the dishes in the Paleo cooking book, we make most of the meat itself with the bone in. The broth basically is water with a mirepoix and bones out of fish, means any kind of seafood, beef, and chicken. So what we do in our cooking, while we are making the dish itself, we make the broth. So basically, we cook the food, tagine, for 1.5 to 2 hours. At the same time, we're cooking and we're making the broth.
Yeah, it's actually a really neat perspective, because it's something that I think, you know, the paleo community is trying to bring broth back into our diets, but it's still very separate, right? We make the broth and then we add it to our vegetables or to our meat, rather than the more traditional technique of you just put everything into a pot together and you just all the nutrients kind of blend together and you get everything at the end, but it's like a finished dish. And it's a very different cooking strategy, and I think one that is maybe underused in sort of more typical paleo cooking.
We had a little bit of both, Sarah. We have the broth recipes separately in the back, and then we have also the recipes where we urge you to use the meat on the bones in the with the vegetables in the one pot dishes. But, you know, real life happens, and, you know, maybe you don't have the bone broth made, so you can just go ahead and use water. And it might not be as tasty, but it will still, you'll still get a lot of the benefits of bone broth in the dish. It might not be as mineral rich as a slow cooked long bone broth, but it would still be much better than just eating chicken breasts.
Right, exactly. I think it's really neat that you guys have combined both the sort of more traditional methods, but then also the more, I mean, I guess what we would consider practical, the sort of way that is so common in paleo, even though it's no easier or less easy, but it's sort of like the more common, and you kind of have both options. I think that's really neat. And I think that's a really great transition into our first question, which is from Kelly. And Kelly writes, I'm curious if the source of the bones makes a difference when making broth. I can get bones at Whole Foods, but they aren't grass-fed. There is a ranch about 45 minutes from my house where I go to stock up on grass-fed beef and pork, but they don't always have bones available. Will I get the same benefits from using conventional bones from beef, pork, and chicken, or should I find online sources to get grass-fed or pastured? Is it worth the extra trouble? Thank you for any information.
Well, I mean, I think broth is better than no broth. So, I mean, I would make it. Sometimes I've made it even from crappy chicken. If I, you know, maybe I was at my parents' house and all they had was something, and I would just make it. I just didn't care, because I knew it was better than not having it. So, you know, you have to think about that perspective. If you don't want to be so perfect that you don't make it at all, you know. What do you think, honey?
In my opinion, I mean, with the server places I worked at, and we make gallons, like 40 to 50 gallons maybe a week out of broth. Sometime we have weddings and we got the bone-in grass fed. It seems like the gelatin forms better when it comes to a grass fed beef. Rather than the regular one, the one we sell at the restaurant, it doesn't gel as much and it takes longer. So I'm assuming, with my just regular day-to-day experience, that using the grass-fed one, it gels faster and better compared to not grass-fed. But scientifically, I have no idea.
I mean, that's actually been my experience in my kitchen as well, that I get better, like a more gelatinous broth from bones from grass-fed animals. And I haven't seen any studies that have measured like the health of the joints between a grass-fed animal and a conventional animal. But we know that these are tissues that remodel constantly in response to the stimulus of walking. So I can imagine that it doesn't necessarily have to do so much about whether a cat was eating grass or eating grain so much as whether or not a cow had the freedom to walk around versus a cow that doesn't. Like, I think that that's probably the thing that makes the biggest difference in terms of the collagen content of their bones and of their joints.
Well, the minerals too would be higher in a more...
if you had a denser bone, you would have, because that's what would happen, right? If the animal's walking around, they would have higher bone density as well.
And a confined animal wouldn't be walking around.
Right, exactly. Or, I mean, there's every amount of green in between. So, you know, there's some animals that are considered grass-fed, but they actually have fairly limited ranges of movement. And then there's some animals that are grain-fed, but it's because they have this trough full of grain in the middle of this giant pasture and they get to roam free. So there's kind of all of the different grays in between. What I do, I make bone broth with whatever bones I happen to have. Because I think that even, you know, conventional chicken bones, it still makes a really tasty broth. And I'm with you, Caitlin. Like, I believe that, you know, broth is better than no broth. And I don't like wasting any part of the animal. So I always make the broth. But what I do when I am making broth from conventional animals is I always skim the fat. So if I'm making it from, like, really great grass-fed bones, then I usually leave the fat in, or I'll, like, use the fat for cooking. And if I'm making it from conventional, I'll chill the broth and then scrape the fat off the top and toss it, because the fat profile is so different. And that's the biggest difference between conventional and grass-fed is the fat profile. So I think you're still getting tons of really good stuff from conventional bones. It's just the fats are going to be higher in omega-6s and lower in omega-3s, so they're just not as good for you.
I would urge this reader to search for chicken feet and heads, and to maybe get in touch with her Weston A. Price chapter locally, because they can have a lot of resources if she hasn't found them herself.
Have you ever been able to get chicken heads?
I live in San Francisco a lot of the time, so.
You can get everything there is what you're saying? Okay.
It's pretty easy to get them if you have, like, a regular butcher you go to. You can, you know, be a nice customer to them, and they always have extra. And when they go and buy them in bulk, they can get them for free for you.
It's not Algeria, honey.
I can ask my farmers, and, like, even something that they normally wouldn't get back from the meat processor, they will put in a special request so I can get, like, a bag of feet or a bag of chicken hearts or whatever that they don't realize they have a market for, so they're just going to throw it out anyways. So that's really exciting. So I guess I just need to ask if they can get heads for me and see what happens. I don't know. Rules in Georgia can be a little tricky.
I found him at the, you know, one of my friends was living in my house this summer, and she left my whole freezer full of chicken heads and chicken feet. So she must have found them in Nashville too.
Well, then that's not so far of a drive from me. So I've got a backup plan. I need it. Drive to Nashville and just start knocking on people's doors. Where'd you get chicken heads from here?
I think when I read this question, I guess that the crux of it to me is that, yes, the health benefits of the bones, the glycine in particular, and the collagen are still going to exist in conventional bones. And I guess what I struggle with, and I think we hear pretty often, is people want to know, like, where can they find bones? And I think that gets back to kind of our earlier discussion about cooking with bones. Like, for us, yes, we buy whole animals, and, like, it is the thing in our freezer that we seem to never run out of is bones, because when you buy a whole animal, you get a lot of bones. So people know that I have soup almost every single day. To know that, like, we rarely run out of bones, I guess if people are interested in purchasing them, you know, buying whole animal, quarter cow, half pog, or whatever it is, we'll do that for you.
Or even just buying meat off the bone. So I haven't bought a half pig in a very, very, very long time, and probably won't for a while because of the new practices of my farmer that I disagree with. But But I mean, like when I buy pork chops, I usually buy the pork chops on the bone. And when, you know, like we do a lot of that kind of meat on the bone. I always buy a whole chicken and I save them. So whenever I cook them, however, I, you know, before we scrape the plates, I grab all the bones and stick them into a bag and throw them in the freezer. And I have them like labeled. So I have a bag for pork bones and a bag.
I've never seen it so organized. When I was at your house, I was so impressed with like the type of bones and the date of them and the type of stock that you had in jars in your freezer. I was like, oh my gosh, this makes me feel like a jerk.
Well, I'm very particular about which bones get mixed in terms of flavor. So I like chicken and turkey can mix together. I'm okay with that. Pork's got to be separate. And then I'm okay with mixing beef and lamb. Like that, those there's, or you know, bison can go with beef and lamb, but there's like those categories. And then when I'm making, you know, soup or just drinking a mug of broth, like for sipping, I'd rather just sip on chicken broth. For making, you know, some stew or some braised vegetables, I'd rather use pork or beef. So that's why it's so labeled, because I care.
So what I think is important about what you said though is that when you cook with bones, you take them when you're done and you make broth with them, which I think is a really important part that people seem to miss, which is that the bones aren't like done, and I'm using quotation marks. They're not like used up until they're soft. And that's something that kind of we've tried to focus on a lot. And I know, Caitlin and Nabil, if you're making broth within like an hour or two, it's not like you're not fully utilizing those bones either, and you can still save them and use them again to make either a different broth, or you can choose to cook that broth for longer and make like a concentrated broth. Then what we do is we add like some water to or something later when it becomes super dense and concentrated. So, you know, I think what's kind of I want to highlight about what we're responding to here is that you should have, I don't like the word should, if you're utilizing like the parts of animals that are whole parts and not just like chicken breast, then you will have bones left over from regularly cooking, and you just save them and you make broth out of them later when you have enough. And the other thing that I want to mention that isn't in this question is fish. Fish is a really great, we don't make fish stock often enough, in my opinion. And it is a place where you can get heads, and it is something that you can get from conventional grocery stores, have wild caught fish. And so you can get that, like a whole fish wild caught, you know, fillet it, use the meat of it, and then save the bones, the head, everything, and make fish stock from it. And then,
and you get super gelatinous stock in like an eighth of the amount of time with fish. Like the most you're ever going to cook fish stock is 3 or 4 hours.
Oh, it's the fish stock, you can make it within 45 minutes to 1 hour.
Yeah, I was going to say 30 minutes to an hour is being a little cavalier. You're right, 45 minutes.
Yeah, so basically, even at work, what we do is just we buy the whole fish. We don't buy the fillet by itself. To make anything like sometime we make a saffron fish broth, or we make even we add a little bit of fish broth in the beurre blanc after we put it out of, we just freeze it a little bit and we put it in the beurre blanc. It gives it a ton of flavor without even putting it on the fish. At the same time, it's much cheaper buying any meat or fish or chicken on the bone itself. So basically, you're saving money and you're saving yourself, like your health, like you're getting the broth. I mean, the chicken is really easy to, you know, split in 4 or 8 pieces. Then you have the broth, you have the meat, and you have a wonderful dish at the end.
I think I need a condensed version of that on a t-shirt. Like, buy it on the bone, save your wallet and your health. Like, right?
Yeah.
That'd be awesome. I think we need a design. Someone needs to come up with a design for that t-shirt right now.
And it's funny, even if you buy a big amount of it, like when we buy it for a hotel, we buy like thousands of dollars worth of meat. We always get it on the bone and we end up with a great product at the end.
And Stacey brought up fish broth, and we have a chipino, a wonderful chipino, which is like the San Francisco fisherman's stew that's derived from Spanish and Portuguese fishermen. And we have a fish broth recipe for that, and it uses all the different parts of kind of leftover whatever seafood you have. It's a great way to save money. And, you know, you don't have to use exactly what we use, but you can just buy the cheapest things that are on sale or leftover and make a big, wonderful fisherman's stew.
You're making me hungry. So I'm going to go on. I'm going to go on to the next question. It's really too late in the day for me to eat. I'm on the East Coast. So we have a question from Jen, and Jen writes, would you please share your process for making bone broth? I started cooking for the first time in my life a little more than a year ago when I went paleo. I'm still not a very efficient cook, though, so everything seems to take me longer than it needs to. I know I'm making broth correctly, it even gels, but I'm not sure I'm doing it in the most efficient way. Do you make huge batches or constantly have some going? It's usually such an ordeal for me to make it that I can't imagine making it every week. Do you put veggies in towards the end of cooking, or do you add roasted veggies to just broth later when you're having soup? There's a lot of questions all in one.
I just want to state for the record, and Nabil, I'm sure you're with me on this one, that if there's veggies in it, it's stock and not broth. But that doesn't make it any less valid. It actually adds to the nutrient value. So there's like this thing in the community about calling everything that you combine water and bones with to be bone broth. But when you're talking to chefs and even regular cooks, most people will call that a stock. So I would just say, like, if people are asking in particular about how do we make mat soup, we make a stock and then we also strain that stock so that we're left with just the juice part. And then he adds like vegetables and meats and leftovers and whatever every morning when he cooks it fresh. It's basically just chopped vegetables with the liquid over top. So I think I answered like one or two of all of those questions, but I just want to like put that out there that it's one of the things that I want to clarify to people if we're having a broth 2.0 show, because I know that it's like Matt's raving behind me with this giant flag making sure that I tell people about stock. Nabil, you have thoughts on that?
I was just being a gentleman waiting for the two girls to say something.
You're so, the special guest. Go ahead.
I mean, at restaurants and hotels or whatever you work at, we always make stock. We don't make any broth. So basically, math is right. I mean, math is right, but Stacy is right. I mean, she's the one who said the words, but we make the stock and we most of the time roast the vegetables. Yes, but we do it differently from the one we put it in the book itself at the restaurant, because we make huge batches. And the lady who asked the question, she can do it if she doesn't want to do it once a week. She can do it and it freezes well and it stays in the fridge maybe like up to like a week or so. And the thing is, just make sure when you add the vegetables to your broth or the bones, don't overcook them. If you overcook them, they become bitter and they influence the taste of the stock at the end. So it's like people think like that there's the myth that, oh, as long as we keep the bone inside the water, the better the stock will be, which is wrong. If you leave the fish for too long, it builds a foam and it became bitter. So if I'm making any sense to this lady, just do it one time a week, a big batch, and stock it. And it freezes well.
You mean and store it?
Yeah, stock it. No. That's the word, right?
Yeah, but
stock the stock.
Too close to stock. So you mean store. I mean, you know, there's a lot of recipes for this reader, and I think you can overthink it. And we have, like, my husband makes it very detailed way more than I do. So you have to go with your own instincts and your own comfort level. I am very simple. Just put a bunch of water and a bunch of bones in the crock pot, put salt. Sometimes I put vinegar, apple cider vinegar. Sometimes I don't, if I have it, if handy, I put it. If I don't, then whatever. And maybe I put a garlic clove. That's it. I put it on and I go do whatever I'm going to do for like 24 hours. Then I strain it off, put it in the fridge, in jars, or put it in the freezer, or I just keep it in, like Stacy and Matt do, and just use that. Well, in the morning, the fat will rise to the top. You scrape it off. You can save it, like Sarah said, or use it. You can throw it away, or you can save it if it's good fat. And then you would use it, like I'm just made a cauliflower soup. Then I just basically boiled my cauliflower in the broth, and then pureed it with my, you know, immersion blender. And that's, you know, that's how I use it on a daily basis. And, you know, but if you want to make a restaurant version, in our book, we have both ways. We have the chef version and we have the easy crockpot version. So you just have to go with your, you know, if you're making it a big production, then you're probably overdoing it. And, you know, you don't want that to be a hindrance in getting the broth into your body. So, you know, I would say just cut down some of the steps, because it's good either way. And there's no wrong answer. But I would avoid putting, I don't put a lot of vegetables because I'm not going to watch it and take them out. I usually add my vegetables later.
Once that's what I do. So I'll let my broth go, you know, 24, 36 hours, and then I'll add vegetables for the last like 2 to 4 hours, depending on how small of pieces. And I usually, it's one of the ways that I save time with broth is like, I might chop a carrot into 3 pieces before I put it in my broth. I'll like cut an onion into 4. Like I put in the big, huge chunks because, you know, I'm just boiling it in this broth. Like I'm going to strain it out later. And it makes it actually, that's one of the things that makes making broth really efficient for me. So it's like, throw all the bones and some water into a pot. And I'm with you, Caitlin. Like sometimes I put in vinegar. Sometimes I don't bother. Sometimes I remember 12 hours later and I add it 12 hours later, like whatever. And then I let that go. And then if it tastes good, then I don't bother putting in aromatic vegetables and I'll just leave it the way it is. And then if it tastes kind of bland, then that's when I'll do usually onion, like mirepoix mix, like what Nabil said earlier. So onions, celery and carrot, and then usually some garlic. And that's about it. That's about as fancy as I get. A bay leaf. Let's go really crazy and throw in a bay leaf. But I have this new trick for making broth that I really, really like. Because for me, the biggest hassle of broth is straining it. Like that to me, that's the job. Like there's, you know, you gotta, you know, you're throwing stuff into a pot, you're making sure it's topped up with water, you're making sure it's not boiling over. You know, that's a lot easier if you're using a slow cooker or pressure cooker, but it's, I mean, there's that part, but then no matter what you make it in, you have to strain it. And that to me is like, that's the annoying part. So what I bought was I bought a large stock pot with a pasta insert. And
what kind of insert?
Pasta insert.
Okay. I just want to make sure.
Oh man, how do you say pasta?
Pasta. Well, see, here in the States we say pasta.
You
Well, don't get started on accents. Don't start calling an accent.
Alright.
It's the running podcast joke. Nabil's accent's cute.
But mine's just joke fodder.
Yours is just Canadian fodder.
My favorite.
I'm not saying that word now. I didn't even know that was another word that I say differently from you Americans. What's going to happen when I become a citizen next year and I still say words in this weird way?
We'll still continue to make fun of you on the podcast.
I think you're doing all right, Sarah.
You're doing
making
just fine
it in America. You're just like Eddie Murphy.
I'm just like Eddie Murphy and Jim Carrey and basically all of the funny comedians. Okay, so now I completely lost my train of thought. Pasta insert. Because it just sounds snobby to say it in the American way. All right. So then what I do is I throw all of my bones and everything inside the pasta insert. And then when I'm ready to strain the soup, the stock, all I do is I lift the pasta insert and I put it inside like a rimmed baking sheet or like a, you know, empty roasting pan or something to drain. And then, ba-dum, it's strained. It's like by far the easiest way of straining broth or stock that I've ever found. And it, for me, it saves the annoying messy part and makes it.
I don't know. I think there's some value in getting like that broth steam all up in your face when you pour it out.
Yeah. Getting a facial.
And it's gotta be like that, the best facial ever.
So there's that. I guess you either have efficient broth or
a great facial.
Great facial.
I think I'm lucky. I'm lucky to have a special one at work. We always use big steamers, and the big steamers has like a faucet underneath. So we just open the faucet, and all the liquid comes out, and the vegetables and the sachet stays inside. Then the dishwasher comes and get rid of them.
So that's even way cooler than a pasta insert.
I don't want you to change the way you say things. I'll be so sad if you stop being Canadian.
Oh, it's going to happen eventually.
That's why I enjoy the few things you still say. And you start saying pasta, I'm going to start saying pasta.
Deal.
And I'm saying it in French after.
How do you say it in French?
Les pâtes.
You win. You and Sarah can talk French together. I'll just sit here and be bored.
All right. Any other questions,
Sarah? Different accent. That's all my questions. So, do you guys have any last brothy thoughts or Mediterranean cooking thoughts that you'd like to share?
So, I would like to chime in that not only does Mediterranean paleo have a lot of broth things in it, which Sarah and I highly endorse for its nutrient value. But I was pleasantly surprised to see that there was a significant number of offal, not awful, recipes in the book. And I love that all three of us have had books recently come out, and all three of them are highlighting some of these really important foods. And I don't remember if I've made this joke here on the podcast, and I apologize to everyone who's heard it already, but I thought it was interesting that when Sarah and I were at the Take Back Your Health conference and we were talking on a panel with a functional medicine doctor, and he was talking about how in the wild, the lions eat the organs of the kill and they leave the muscle meat for the hyenas. And that's like top of the food chain food. And we believe that that is also what happened, you know, years and years ago with our ancestors in terms of the meats that we eat to help grow our brains to be big enough to build things like computers and skyscrapers. So I think that it's wonderful that you all did that. And I want to first thank you. And I want to also share this with our listeners because it's something that we talk about very often on the show and we highly encourage people to eat. And so, you know, if you've enjoyed the offal recipes that Sarah and I have put out in the Paleo Approach Cookbook and Beyond Bacon and Real Life Paleo, and actually there's even some in Eat Like Dinosaur, but those books really focus on incorporating those traditional nutrient-dense organ meats, so to speak. And if that's something that you're looking to expand your horizons with, you will also find that in Mediterranean Paleo.
I'm just saying that Alton Brown pronounces it awful. And actually went on a rant on, I can't remember what show, I actually think it was an Iron Chef, about how it's pronounced awful.
I'm sure. I can't. That's too punny.
You probably don't like saying Uranus either.
Oh my goodness. Did you see my post?
No. Did I just hit a little too close to home right there?
No, Cole's learning about the universe right now in science, and he's coming home with all kinds of Uranus jokes. Like, every night at the dinner table, he starts laughing before he says the joke. He's like, Daddy, like Beavis and Butthead. And we know it's coming, right? And so he's like, Daddy, there's a gas cloud around Uranus. I was like, oh my God, this is my life for the next 14 years. Sorry.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's a good life. It's a good life.
Yeah, it's my boy. Anyway.
Well, Nabil knows about having a gigantic family full of boys. He has a soccer team at home.
Did you ruin your mother with, you know, a lifetime of poop jokes and fart jokes? And that's like all I'm getting these days.
Actually, we left those jokes for the girls at home most of the time. I mean, I grew up in a big family. It's 11 altogether.
Oh, wow.
So most of the time, like, the boys go outside and we play outside and then they play inside. So
you leave the fart jokes outside.
Yeah, it's like, you cannot, be nice. You cannot say that next to your sister.
They outnumber me, Nabil.
I know. It's 4-1, right?
Yeah.
That's why I had girls. I just planned it better than you.
Well, getting back
maybe
to the
Stacey, hospital. Maybe Stacey ate a lot of bacon, that's why.
Can I tell you what my youngest daughter calls them? She calls them bum burps.
Oh my gosh.
She didn't know what they were called.
Oh, so I'm so like, using that the next time they start talking about it.
That's pretty cute.
That was adorable. So now she calls them bum burps. Yeah.
All right. Sorry, Caitlin. Did you want to stay on topic? Did you think this was a real professional podcast for a minute?
No. I mean, you know, poop is what we're all about too, you know.
That's true.
But I mean, one of the things, you know, I just want people to know is that we traveled twice to North Africa to do research for this book and to see Nabil's mom, who our book is dedicated to. But during that time, I noticed that they eat liver 3 or 4 times a week, just, and everyone seems to like it, and they don't have the stigma that we have about it. And one of my most favorite ways is they grill it, and every place you walk down the street, they're grilling it on the side of the road, and you just sit down and you buy like maybe 10 skewers and just eat them. And the yummiest thing they do is they mix a piece of liver, a piece of fat, a piece of liver, a piece of fat. And it's like the most wonderful thing. And, you know,
Sarah's booking her tickets right now.
Yeah.
I was thinking maybe the Paleo View tour should hit North Africa.
I know. And I mean, I just loved it. And I felt like Anthony Bourdain, you know, in eating all the weird things. And I mean, my only exposure to liver as a child was Southern fried livers through the drive-thru with my dad. So I didn't have like a real aversion, but I never had them in a healthy way, you know? So I just fell in love with that liver, and I wanted to bring that back and put it into our book because, you know, Nabil loves liver, and so we just wanted to share tasty ways to prepare it, and we have different ways in our book. And one other way we have it is braised with liver and mushroom and a sauce, and it makes it so tender, and it has cumin, so it's really good.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much for joining us. And this was like a really fun, well, like broth/awful/pasta insert/fart discussion. And yeah, thanks so much. Stacey?
Yeah. Pasta, farts, bacon, liver, broth. I need nothing more in life.
Our day's complete. I can go to bed now. We're good.
It was so great to chat with you guys for a few minutes, and hopefully we'll see you again at probably Paleo FX.
Yeah, well, if you guys come, I'm going to see
you. Oh, that's right. We're going to see you in Nashville. Yeah, so we should tell people. Again, we will be in Nashville, and Caitlin will be a special guest at our Nashville book signing. I have the date in front of me because Sarah puts notes together.
January 2nd.
January 2nd. So
yeah, that'll be fun. And if you have Mediterranean paleo cooking, you can bring it too, and I'll sign it. And Nabil will, maybe he'll be there to be continued. We don't know.
We like it when Nabil's there. He always gives great hugs.
Yeah.
It's true. It's true.
You're a nice guy, Nabil. What can I say?
Thank you. Thank you. You're nice people. So you make me laugh and you make me happy, like, to talk about everything. And I don't feel like I'm the weirdo from Africa.
Well, I guess that's the thing, is like, Americans are just not good natured. Because Sarah's a hugger and you're a hugger. I'm just the cranky, sardonic one.
So, and you just represent all of America right now.
Exactly. I am America.
Okay. So Nabil and I will represent the rest of the world.
There you go.
Between the two of us.
Great. All right. We play football and Americans play soccer.
That's true.
It does make more sense to call it football. I'll give the rest of the world one thing.
The rest of the world thanks you.
Excellent.
All right. Well, everyone, thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you for having us.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to The Paleo View. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes. You can also support us by shopping for our favorite paleo products on the sidebars of our individual websites or by donating through PayPal.
There's lots for you to cut out, babe.
Okay.
Including that fart.
On the bright side, I don't think I heard it. So
it's not that bad.
I don't know if your microphone picked it up or not, but
silent but deadly.
Put in like one of those, like, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? Like stunt fart noises. Mm.